working out of.
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jabe Huard just punched me in the kidney.
On Seattle Sports.
Well, we're going to accuse you of a manager.
That really worked that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Hello!
All right, I kind of hesitate to say good morning, but morning. It's a Tuesday morning. Mike Lefko with you. Morris here. Justin's here. I was really wondering about this. I was driving in today, and I thought, how do you start something where it might not have been a good morning? That's just the colloquial conversation piece, right? You don't say morning to someone. That's a little strange. But after that Mariners game, I don't know if it's a good morning. Would that just kind of become the accepted term? So, I don't know. Do we say morning to start the show? Do we just say, hey, what's up, listeners? I don't know. Those are the thoughts that go through my mind on the empty roads driving in at 5 a.m.-ish. So,
well, you start with a $5 word of colloquial, so that's good. That's good, man. I appreciate you testing this.
Hey, it's been a while since I've been here this early, so it's fun. We're going to have fun today, even if the Mariners did not provide us many opportunities to have some fun, because there's a lot to get into about that, but... Hi, both of you. Nice to be back here. I do have a question, and I'm sorry if you guys have talked about this, if your listeners have heard about this, but Maura, is Salk ducking you?
I mean, I don't know.
Is he avoiding you since the race?
I would love to say yes, but I went out of town first, so I don't know that I might be a hypocrite if I did.
Or was it conveniently scheduled that Salk was just like, you know what?
You know what? Hit the race.
You can take that week off. Yeah, I don't know. And then I'm going to be gone by the time you get back. So it's just a little suspicious.
The race was his plan.
A little suspicious.
He did know. My vacation was already scheduled.
Okay. All right. That's those are the things that go through my head. Also, another thing that went through my head yesterday, watching Simeon Woods Richardson, who we will talk about. We have Corey Provis, the TV voice of the Twins, coming up at 7:30. Brady Henderson at 8:30. But this guy who has made, you know, all of four career starts, who had never been up for an extended period of time before this recent stretch. He had been called up, made a start, got sent back down. I didn't even know his name was Simeon. I thought it was just Woods Richardson. Because you're looking at all the pitching matchups going into this game, and they list it out, and it's Woods Richardson. There's no hyphen. So I was like, okay, well, that's just his name, I guess. That's a name that makes sense. So here's my other complaint this morning.
There was no space left on the back of that jersey.
Exactly. If you're going to have a last name like that, hyphenate it. Come on. You can't have a last name that's that long, that sounds like a first name, that is not hyphenated. And I think that's the only explanation for how the Mariners were so unprepared for what they were going to see.
Just distracted by that.
Because
you're right.
They just didn't know who they were facing. They were looking up their scouting reports. They were trying to find who Woods Richardson was, as I was yesterday. Yesterday, before the game, I was looking up, all right, who is this guy? Searching Woods Richardson. And then, you know, his first name popped up, Simeon. I thought it was one of those, that's his given name, but he goes by Woods, because Woods is a cooler name than Simeon. But I don't know. I mean, it's tough to explain how the Mariners got completely just bamboozled, really, is what it looked like in those first two innings. Five of the first six batters struck out. This guy finished with eight strikeouts, his career high, and the Mariners had 14 strikeouts. At least 14 strikeouts for the sixth time this season. So not a lot of good there. That was very surprising. So all of that to make the point of, you know, I wanted to say good morning. I don't know if I can. That's just what I'm thinking about here on this Tuesday. We will try to make the best of it. Brock and I will kind of piece through this Mariners lineup, what's going on there, and get some insight on, hey, is this more of what to expect for the rest of the series? Three more games against the Twins. So we'll talk to Corey Provis about that. These teams are remarkably similarly built, and it seems to always be the case over the past few seasons, talking about the Twins and the Mariners. Last year was used to kind of justify both of them struggling. But yeah, you look at that, and this guy and then their bullpen kind of upstaged Luis Castillo, and it really brought up the fear of what happens for the Mariners when they need perfection from their pitchers. Because Luis Castillo, you know, made like one mistake, right? Walked a guy, gave up a double. And then another manageable mistake. You shouldn't expect your pitchers to be on that thin of a margin. But that's where the offense has left you right now. And it's a tough place to be in, because, you know, you have a very winnable game. You have opportunities in that game, especially in the seventh, where it looked like finally, you get to the bullpen where the Mariners have, and yes, I know people have brought this up jokingly, the Mariners have not allowed an opposing starting pitcher to go seven innings. Probably, yeah, because they notch up his pitch count with all the strikeouts, but that also gets to a team's bullpen, and not every team has a lockdown bullpen like the Mariners do, so the Twins' back end is very good, but when you get there in the seventh, that was the opportunity. They had the bases loaded, no outs, and unfortunately, another familiar situation where you don't get anything with the bases loaded, no outs. You get one run, but you don't get it on anything of your own doing. You know, sack fly, that's the only thing that happened. In the Astros series, so many opportunities for big innings could have happened. And what, it felt like a double play in every situation. Did hurt them on Friday, almost came back to hurt them on Sunday. So at this point, it's tough. I don't know. We'll see what Brock, if he has answers on this offense. But I don't know, guys. I'm a little confused this morning.
And the double, which was originally ruled an error, right, on Ty, that went down the first baseline.
Yeah.
Has been changed because it hit the bag.
That hit off the bag. Okay. And I think after a lot of replays, you can kind of tell that was a strange looking ball.
Yeah.
Right? Because it looked like he was taking it kind of casually.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden, it stayed low, but hitting off the back of the bag made sense. It looked like he was expecting kind of that bounce, was in position for that bounce to play a tough ball when you're shaded behind the bag anyway. Yeah, that didn't help things.
Yeah, but the difference, you mentioned how small the margins are, and you're right. But when you have your star, in this case, I guess for the Twins, Correa, who comes up and actually comes through in a couple moments where he had a chance to do some damage, the Mariners needed one of those at-bats, just one of those at-bats yesterday, and you couldn't get one. That is pretty frustrating against a guy who is their deep fifth starter, right?
Yeah.
Because now you get to the top of the rotation.
Yeah, and this is a guy who, now the Twins had an offseason. We talk about similarities. The Twins had an offseason very similar to the Mariners, where, you know, they shed a lot of payroll. They did not re-sign two of their starting pitchers, so they have no pitching depth. So they've had to call this guy up because of some injuries, and now it looks like Woods Richardson, I'm just going to call him that. I don't even care about his first name anymore. It looks like Wood Richardson is here to stay, especially if he can just bank on that performance against the Mariners. Hey, next time he signs a contract, he's going to hold that up and say, well, look what I can do. I do wonder, I'm going to get into this with Brock a little bit. It felt like the Mariners had game planned for one approach against him.
Yes.
And they were completely confused by what he did.
Mentioned
because
on the broadcast.
Yeah, it's right. Exactly. So that's what got me thinking about it. So when Aaron Goldsmith mentioned this kind of early on, he goes, oh, it's a lot more fastballs than we were expecting to see. Because Woods Richardson, his fastball tops out at 94. It's not a good fastball, averages 92. So against a good fastball hitting team, it felt like to me, the Mariners came in fully prepared to see a slider, something that he does not throw often or something that they have struggled with. And then I started to look. As Goldsmith said that, I was like digging through, okay, what does this guy throw? Well, he throws his fastball a lot. The Mariners are a good fastball hitting team. It felt like they game planned for what they thought he would do. And then when they saw his standard pitch, they weren't ready to adapt. Now, that could be a bigger issue in itself. But when you look at these first three innings, you know, he strikes out five of the first six. He threw all fastballs or changeups in the first two innings. He did not throw a slider until Mitch Garver in the third inning. And after Goldsmith said that, it just stuck in my mind. I have not gotten it out of my head. I think the Mariners did a thorough scouting report like they do, like every team does. And it's almost what Logan Gilbert did against the Rangers, where the Rangers did not know how to handle that cutter. They hadn't seen it before. They didn't know how effective it would be. And it feels like the Twins just completely caught the Mariners off guard. Now, there's a bigger issue you can get into that about, okay, well, shouldn't you be able to adjust? How do you adapt to something like that? That's what they were supposed to be working on in this offseason, what we thought would be the change.
Well,
but in that moment,
struggles at the beginning of the season, they were like, well, we're not seeing any fastballs.
Right. And this is, if you look at what this guy threw, it was fastballs. And you don't want to kind of simplify it down to just that of, hey, he threw something the Mariners were not expecting to see. But in that moment, in these first two innings, it felt exactly like that. Now, I don't know how you fix that. I don't know if it is back to the, hey, this is too much paralysis by analysis, like it happened in Scott Service mentioned. They got away from the iPads after the Reds series, and it worked. So I don't know if it is just overly processing and just letting, you need to go out and let your guys feel, have some intuitive sense at the plate. But that's exactly what it felt like. And I'm glad I'm not the only one who picked up on that. So I'll be interested to know what Brock thinks about that. But yeah, when Goldsmith said that, obviously it stuck with you guys, stuck with me as well. So it was a very, very strange start. Not a good start to the series. Season low, 3 hits for the Mariners and 14 strikeouts. So we'll dig into that. We got a lot of Seahawks to talk as well, because I know Brock was just like chomping at the bit, right? Yesterday, he wanted to talk football. You had Ryan Roland Smith here, so you get the baseball insight. But a lot of Seahawks observations coming off of rookie minicamp. Brady Henderson will join us at 8:30. Twins TV play-by-play voice Corey Provost will join us at 7:30. Maybe he can answer that question. I doubt he will. I doubt he's going to be that full and open and honest, and maybe he might not know. But I am curious to know about the fastball usage from Simeon Woods Richardson, who has a name that needs to be hyphenated. The poor Jersey guy who does, again.
You're so focused.
How they have to stretch that name to fit. Can you imagine trying to stencil that last name on the back of the jersey? It's the full loop around. It just looks terrible.
It's a little easier with the jerseys they have this year.
Yeah, I know. You just handwrite it in, and it's terribly scrawled, and it's small on the back of the jersey. But, yeah, that's how we get started today here on Brock and Salk. Mike Lefko in with you. Coming up next, there are a few more things you need to know, especially around the baseball world. One big change in the AL West, and it might help the Mariners over the next few weeks. This is the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Mariners were held to a season-low 3 hits last night. Also struck out 14 times, second most they've had in a game this season. Third time they struck out 14 times in a game this season as well. Simeon Woods Richardson racked up a career-high 8 strikeouts. And in the AL West, the Rangers also beat the A's 4-2 to win their third straight. So it's not the biggest issue in the world right now on May 7th, but the M's do slide out of first place with those results. They're now a half game behind the Rangers. It does mean it's a pretty big start for Emerson Hancock today after the Braves knocked him off his approach early. He lasted just 3 2/3 innings in his last start. And also because Brian Wu gets ever closer returning after he went 5 shutout innings, striking out 6 and allowing just 3 hits on Saturday. His third and likely final rehab start, with the Mariners set to return to town this week. So we'll see what happens for Emerson Hancock. Pre-game coverage begins right here on Seattle Sports at 3:30 for the 4:40 first pitch.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
We'll talk to Brady Henderson about this and much more coming up at 8:30. But yesterday he reported that the Seahawks have restructured Mike Jackson's salary to slightly over $1 million, all non-guaranteed. They dropped that down, but they did give him a $167,500 signing bonus. According to OverTheCap.com, though, the Seahawks are still $1.5 million over the cap in effective cap space. That means the amount needed to sign all of their rookies. So it's just a projection. But depending on your preferred salary cap website, the Seahawks do not have a lot of cap space. Spotrac, another website that closely tracks these things, has them at just about $1 million in cap space, so they do not have a lot of room. We'll see what they do after they sign all of their draft picks. And a few other NFL notes. Rashad Penny has signed with the Panthers as Dave Canales continues to build Seahawks East. Now, Justin will like this. Joe Burrow was throwing at Bengals. No, I didn't mean you had to laugh like that, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Seahawks East, I thought that was a good joke.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's early, so maybe your sense of humor isn't dialed in, I appreciate the laugh there. I thought you were going to like this. Joe Burrow was throwing at Bengals OTAs yesterday after the wrist injury he suffered in mid-November ended his season. So were you doing the Zapruder film, like looking at the wrist?
Oh, no. I was
like
more
every single time, at every throw, looking at the wrist flexion and extension and all that?
No, I was more looking at flights to SoFi and for a Super Bowl more than anything else. That's not working out. It's pretty much locked. So.
Oh, you're going to put yourself through that again?
Wait. Yeah. The Super Bowl's not in SoFi, though.
Is it not SoFi?
It just wasn't SoFi. You just went to the Super Bowl in SoFi.
Where is it? I thought the Super Bowl
was in SoFi.
New
Orleans this year, I think.
You went to the Super Bowl in SoFi like 2 years ago. They don't do it every year there. I'm sorry. It's not Bengals Rams in SoFi every year.
Well, I'm going to go there anyway. I might as well just watch the game.
Yeah, you might as well. Watch the Super Bowl from SoFi. They got a nice setup there. But yeah, Joe Burrow was throwing at Bengals OTAs yesterday. And former Chiefs wide receiver Marquez Valdez-Scantling is visiting the Chargers today. That's according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
The Rangers put rookie Wyatt Langford on the IL with a right hamstring strain. He's expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks. So if you're looking at this Rangers-Mariners back and forth in the AL West, their opening day starter, Nathan Eovaldi, is also visiting a specialist for his right groin strain. So the Rangers are still dealing with some injuries. Now feels like the opportunity, as we've heard, for the Mariners to gain some ground and to get some separation out front of the Rangers. They did take that series against them a little over a week ago, but they have fallen out of first place while the Rangers are dealing with these injuries. This was a cool moment yesterday as well. So with Stephen Kwan on the IL, the Guardians called up Kyle Manzardo, a second-round pick out of Washington State in 2021, who they acquired in a trade with the Rays last year. Now he had a tough welcome to the bigs moment, though. Manzardo 0 for 3 with 3 strikeouts. He was the DH yesterday. We'll see if he's in the lineup again today in the Guardians and Tigers game. The Guardians did win that one, but a cool moment for a Washington State product, but a tough debut there. 0 for 3 with 3 strikeouts. And a couple other things you need to know. How about the 90s? Bring back the 90s as game one of the Pacers and Knicks Eastern Conference semifinal goes down to the wire and includes a controversial illegal screen call against Indiana at the end. It's rigged. It's rigged, I tell you. The NBA, they just want New York to succeed. I can't help it. But another controversy involving the NBA and the New York market. Classic East Coast bias. So, yeah, Knicks win 121-117 behind 43 points from Jalen Brunson. Timberwolves destroy the Nuggets 106-80 to take a 2-0 series lead. And Mora, very excited about this one. Game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals in the NHL. Bruins-Panthers goes to Boston after a 3-goal surge in the second ends up being a 5-1 Bruins win.
Payback.
That had to be nice to see,
payback,
right? After
for
last
getting
year.
Knocked out early last year, yeah, with the best record in the NHL. That's stuff.
I'll tell you what. Maybe it's because they beat the Lightning, but I despise the Panthers. They are unfairly entitled. They have no reason to be that full of themselves. Their fan base, their team. So at least if you're Boston fans, you're annoying and entitled, but you've built up a lot of winning to get to that point. So I guess I'm rooting for the Bruins in this one, the lesser of two evils. But yeah, that is everything you need to know. A lot of playoffs going on, some key AL West action happening. We will get into all of that as well as we continue. But up next, it's a really interesting conversation that Brock and Ryan Roland-Smith had with AJ Pierzynski. And I think it is fascinating because it deals with a lot of a catcher's perspective on not just how good this pitching staff has been and how historic it can potentially be, but the emergence of Cal Raleigh, which is fascinating because AJ points out a couple of things that are interesting to note about how Cal Raleigh has developed over these past few seasons. So you're going to hear that coming up next. This is the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Nice little Monday morning. Salk says this all the time. You just feel better when your baseball team wins. You would get used to watching them on a daily basis. As a fan, we get in the same rhythm. Right, as people following in the media, and man, there's just something about when your baseball team wins, you just have a little better pep in your step. And up 3-0 yesterday in Houston, Bryce Miller's cruising like all these starters have cruised, and then it hits a little bump, and they hit a couple home runs, and all of a sudden they take a lead, and oh man, are we going to find a way to win this? Or is it going to feel like Friday night where we just kind of stub our toe a little bit after a great start? But the boys found a way to finish, man. Urias had 3 hits yesterday. Raleigh hits his first bomb. Cal delivers in the 9th inning, and you leave Houston. Head to Minnesota with Luis on the heel today, yet again with another series win. 6 in a row now, Mr. Hyphen. 6 series wins in a row.
Man, especially after, look, those first couple weeks, I'm not going to lie, I was like, who is this team? Like, what are we looking at this year? What's this going to look like mid-May? All the conversations we'll have, all of a sudden, man, the pitching, that foundation, as boring as that sounds, they're starting to hit a little bit. And then yesterday, too, I think with that series yesterday, Friday, all right, come back from that. They play clean on Saturday. Logan Gilbert was great. But then just to come from behind, win, some life left at the end of that game.
You can feel the juice of the guys as they were running through the dugout. Cool little camera in the back. We got an FOB on right now. Do you know what an FOB is, Hyphen? An FOB is a friend of Benetti. And a friend of Benetti is a friend of everybody, and that's what AJ Pierzynski. Is that fair to welcome you to the show this morning, AJ, with a friend of Benetti reference there? Is that good?
Well, we used to be friends. He's a traitor now, so we're not friends anymore.
Oh, you know what? That's right. He left. Oh, that's he left the South Side. Now he's a Motor City wannabe. Yeah. That's right. Okay, you know, scratch that. Now I'm a welcome.
Wait, what's his saying? Your name is Mud. Benetti's name is Mud. Now let's just establish that.
Perfect.
He's a real he's a Benetti Arnold. We'll just call him that. Leaving us like that. Didn't want to go through the rough years.
Well, then I'll do it the traditional way. A two-time All-Star, World Series champ, 19 years behind the dish in the bigs now with Fox Sports. AJ Pierzynski, kind enough to join us this morning. And AJ, I really wanted your perspective because, you know, as you can imagine, Ryan, a former big league pitcher, and we hear from so many pitchers, don't hear from enough catchers on what you are seeing from this Mariners staff. You got to see him over the weekend down there. What did you see up close and personal?
Logan Gilbert's going to win a Cy Young if he stays healthy at some point.
Like it.
He's that good. Wow. I mean, that was unbelievable what he did Saturday. Friday night, like you guys were just talking about, a little bit of a hiccup in the bullpen, something you don't see from them. A bunch of walks, because they don't walk anybody, right? So the walks, was it by Spire on Friday night where they led to a bunch of runs? That was strange. And then yesterday, I mean, you were talking about it too. Miller was cruising. And, you know, I worked with Aaron Goldsmith on Saturday, Mr. Mariner himself. Sometimes he dresses up as the Moose. He was just talking about the streak. So I couldn't believe that the streak got ended yesterday, because then all of a sudden I'm sure Aaron's phone just blew up because all the Fox people were just like, Aaron, your streak's over. So it's just domination. Their starting pitching is so darn good. They have different guys. They're all right-handed, but they're different guys. They all throw different pitches. I mean, the way Logan Gilbert was up and down and just using, you know, the split and the sweeper / slider with the high fastball combo was just lethal. And the Astros, honestly, they just looked lost against their starters. I know they did a little bit of damage on Sunday, but other than that, they did nothing against those three starting pitchers they saw. And then you go Castillo today. It's a nice problem to have if you're Seattle.
AJ, you talked about, you know, the fact that they don't walk anyone, right? You came up with the Twins, and that was back in the day when it was all about throwing strikes, you know, those rotations. I remember that, like the early 2000s. And I feel like the Mariners rotation, yeah, there's some stuff in there, don't get me wrong, but they're bringing strike throwing kind of back to being trendy, like the way you develop pitches, right?
Yeah, well, they let their pitchers go deep. Imagine that, right? Yeah. The pitchers go 6-7 innings. I mean, man, think about that. Think about what an advantage is for the back end of the bullpen, right? That's kind of what the Astros did for so long when their rotation was healthy. Verlander, Fromber, Christian Javier, they go 6-7 innings. And then, you know what? The bullpen's fresher because they throw less innings. And guys are just more ready to go over time. And the thing about the Mariners staff is, not only do they throw strikes, but they got stuff too. It's not like they're just going out there throwing 85 and,
right,
you know, Jamie Moyer style, right? Throwing strikes and doing it that way. I mean, they're throwing 95. I mean, you watch Logan Gilbert, like I said on Saturday, he was 97, 98 up in the zone, but for strikes, backing it up with a split. You see Bryce Miller, who we had on, was a great guest with us. I mean, doing the same thing, you know, Kirby, you know. I'm just mad at Kirby hadn't thrown a knuckleball yet the whole year. I mean, when are we going to break that thing
seriously
out?
Seriously.
Just kind of teasing us, right? Saying he's going to do it with the old pitching ninja. And I think the pitching ninja is waiting. Poor guy's like on a hunger strike until old Kirby throws his first little knuckleball. Hey, I want to play this cut from Scott Service yesterday, AJ, because Scott was an old big league catcher like yourself. You did it for so, so long. I love listening to the catcher's perspective and all the things that you look for within and about. Here was Scott talking about the big dumper, not the home run, but how he's managing the staff.
It's just he's got a belief, you know, that we can get it done. He's done it multiple times in the big leagues. And again, he's not trying to hit home runs there. I think everybody says, just trying to hit a home run. No, he's just trying to put the ball in play. And he's big and he's strong and he hits the ball in the air. Like I said, good things happen. So credit to him. Can't get too down in that game. You know, like I said, we probably should have been up 4 or 5 runs in that game. We weren't. But when we got down, guys didn't quit. And we talked about him in pitch and change. Like, hey, we're going to be okay. We will get a shot. And we did. But our guy stepped up and got big hits there late in the 8th and the 9th.
So we credit these pitchers, and they're due the credit. Their stuff is nasty. Their strike throwing's off the charts. Their numbers are ridiculous. What role, if you give me a pie chart, a percentage, what role does Cal Raleigh play as the guy leading that whole rotation from behind the dish?
Listen, as a former catcher, I'm going to say it's 97.2% that he does, and the pitchers just do the other 2.8, okay? I mean, Ryan will tell you, you know, the pitchers don't really do anything. They shouldn't be allowed to think. They shouldn't be allowed to do anything except for to be robots. And, oh, catcher puts down one, I throw one, right? And but no, I'm just kidding. He deserves a ton of credit. He's in the meetings. He's doing his work. You can tell that. When we talked to Scott Service on Saturday, he gave him a ton of credit. I think Cal's a little bit banged up right now, too. He's got a little nagging, couple things going on. that they didn't even talk about. But he just guts through it. I mean, he's had a couple big homers for him. He hit 30-plus last year. I didn't know if I was allowed to call him Big Dumper on the air, though, because he took out a sign in our game on Saturday. And I was like, can I call him Big Dumper on the air? But I went for it, and I didn't get a FCC violation yet. So, I mean, he's got a great nickname. And listen, I mean, he's done a great job for a few years now, squatting back there. He's really smart. He knows what pitches to call. And the most important part, he knows his pitchers, and that's the biggest thing. You got to know your pitchers in order to be a good catcher.
You mentioned Logan is a guy, if he stays healthy, can win a Cy Young. Where is Cal in the pecking order of the best catchers in baseball right now?
He's got to be up there. I think, you know, obviously you talk about Real Muto. You got to talk Jonah Heim in your division because he won the World Series last year. Geez, I'm trying to go through it quick in my head here. Who else? Let me see. He's probably top five-ish. Mm-hmm. You know, if his batting average and his on base is a little bit better, he'd probably be up the ranks a little bit. But you can't look away from the 30-plus home runs. You can't look away from what he does with that staff. And he throws better, I think, than he gets credit for. Not a lot of guys get on base. And when they do, they're usually not worried about him because the Mariners, like, I would just strike him out anyways. So, I mean, he's definitely in the top five discussion for sure.
AJ, you mentioned the catchers doing 97% of the time. Hey, by the way, I don't know if you remember this. Last time we bumped into each other was the Hall of Fame Classic Cooperstown. And I remember Shane Victorino comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, I want you to spin that curveball and throw changeups. Like, you know, he wanted to have a real at-bat. So I'm like, oh, getting all fired up, warming up in the bullpen. I go out, and you're catching. And you said to me, hey, listen, man, just fastballs down the middle. I just don't make me block anything. I want to get out of here. So I was like, oh, thanks, dude. Like, this is my last chance to actually, like, go out and compete. And you just ruined it for me. So I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, that's not true because you did throw some sliders, I believe.
I didn't mean to. They just cut because I didn't know what I was doing. The ball just kind of spun. And
but what'd I tell you? I'm like, we're all old, dude. Just throw it over the plate. Nobody's going to hit it very far, right? Because we're all, you know, retired. But I didn't know that you were trying to make a comeback. If I would have known you were trying to make a comeback, we would have handled that completely differently. We would have went, you know, all sliders, tried to punch out three guys on nine pitches, get the immaculate inning. You could have walked off the field. I would have carried you off on my shoulders, and, you know, it would have been great, like Rudy.
Yeah, that would have been awesome, dude. I flew my buddy up with a radar gun to get some velos and everything. You ruined it for me, dude. I can't believe it.
Do you have your Yakker Tech and your Trackman back there so you could get your spin rate?
Yeah, mounting it up on the walls all over the stadium. Hey, but now listen, man, I want to ask you this because you always seem to take charge in your career behind the dish, right? It's important, obviously. You mentioned the relationship with the pitchers and everything else. What year, like, did you feel you were comfortable enough, you know, when you came up, because you came up your early 20s, but because I remember there were some catchers who would come up, young guys, like, oh, I mean, I put the head down. They didn't want to, you know, speak up with veteran pitchers. But what year was it for you in the big leagues where you felt like you could really take charge with some of these guys on the mound?
Well, I mean, I first came up at 21 years old, right? So I was scared to death. I mean, I thought, you know, listen, I know everything. I came up in September. And I get a couple games in, and, you know, you're scared to death. You know, we had Paul Molitor and Otis Nixon and Bob Tewksbury and, you know, some veteran guys, right? And I'm like 21, and I'm sitting there going, gosh, I can't even speak to Paul Molitor or these guys. But they were great. And then next year I was kind of up and down, so it's kind of tough. 2000, I stick. And then 2001, I went through the year, and we had a veteran guy named Tom Prince who was my backup catcher, and he was great. And he kind of walked me through it. But still, I was a little bit nervous. It wasn't until my second full year where I was comfortable enough to, like, kind of take a little bit more charge. And listen, I had great guys. I mean, Brad Radke, Eric Milton, you know, Kenny Rogers at one point, Rick Reed, some older guys that were just awesome. And I'm sure I'm forgetting some guys, but just great guys. And then I was lucky enough I had a bunch of guys I also came up with. So I already knew him, so it was easier that way. But it takes some time. It's not like most rookie catchers you walk in, you usually have a veteran backup. You don't have two young kids, and the veteran's usually been around. So you need that veteran presence to kind of walk you through. And I was lucky, man. I had Tom Prince. He walked me through it. He taught me a bunch of stuff about how to call games, what to look for as far as, you know, hitters and all that. But you need that. And I think Cal has now taken that next step and to the next level. You know, he had Murphy behind him for the last couple of years. You know, I think they worked together well. Murphy walks away and gets a nice deal, and now it's Kyle's show. And, you know, he catches pretty much every day. He's back there all the time, and he knows what he's doing. But, man, it's hard, especially, you know, it's a little different now in today's game because rookies are a little bit more accustomed to what they're doing, and they've been kind of brought up through the organization with the same stuff. But it's still tough because you don't, you know, what's he going to do? Go out there, you know, Luis Castillo's pitching. He's going to be like, give me your, you know, you're a rookie and you're 21 years old. And you go out there and, hey, Luis, I need you to do this. And he looks at you like, man, shut up. You've been here for a month. Get out of my face.
Hey, I was watching the game Saturday. By the way, you and Goldsmith, it was fun to listen to, man. But one thing I love what you did when Mitch Garver had an at-bat, and you talked about him sitting on that curveball, and he gets that changeup middle of the plate and hits the ball into right center field. Mitch Garver has been struggling. You know, new team. You know, he's come off a World Series win, new environment, new teammates. He's trying to make an impression. How tough is it, man, when you're a month into the season and you're in that situation, he's come into DH full-time. How tough is it when you're just trying to find your groove? And do you see anything with Mitch Garver that tells you it's going to turn that around?
Yeah, track record. A track record of raking his whole career. That's what tells me eventually he's going to turn around. And you see signs of it. Like, you know, that at-bat where he hit the double to right center, that was a great at-bat. Like, you know, you were listening. So, yeah, I mean, he's throwing sitting curveball. You could tell by his at-bat. And then Frommer throws the high changeup, which plays right into a guy sitting on a curveball, right, because it's up out over the plate. And he drives it to right. Yeah, it's different. Okay, so for the first time you change teams is the hardest. I tell everybody this because you just don't know what to expect, especially if you've been on a team for a while. Well, Mitch Garver already did it one time. But then you're a free agent. You get the big deal. So you want to go in and get off to a good start. And when you don't, you literally think your world's going to end. I mean, you're sitting there going, gosh, I've been good my whole career. All of a sudden, what is it? You know, is it Seattle? Is it this? Is it that? What am I doing different? I need to find a routine. But Mitch Garver's going to be fine. It's so hard to explain to somebody that's never been through it. I don't know, like, you know, Brock, maybe when you switch your first NFL mm-hmm. team, or if you're working at, let's say you work at Apple and you go to IBM, you're just like, man, everything's just a little bit different. Even though it's the same job, it's a little bit different. The drive to work's different. The food's a little bit different. I don't have my spots. I don't have this. And it takes a little bit of time to settle in. Most guys, if you watch them, a lot of guys struggle there that first. But then they settle in and they get to where they need to be. But he's going to be – he's going to hit. He's always hit. And the best part is he didn't have to worry about catching anymore. All you got to do is go up there and just smash balls.
Hey, last thing here for you, AJ, and what I love in my college football job is to get on the road. I can watch all the tape. I can do all my note reading and all that good stuff. But then when I actually get close to that team and I watch them practice and I sit in meetings with them and I have just that human interaction, that touch, I always walk away a little bit more informed. I'm curious, as you were doing all your homework for the Mariners the first month of the season, kind of your perception from afar and then the reality when you got to be close to them, spend a day with them, spend meetings with them, and ultimately watch them play. Anything change from your perception to the reality of what you saw?
You know, Scott Servais seems like the perfect guy for that job when you talk to him. Just calm, you know, demeanor. You talk to him about their hitting. He, you know, because let's be honest, like the hitting is the thing. If they hit, they're going to probably win that division with as good as their pitching is. And he was calm about it, just very, you know, we're going to figure it out. We're going to get it going. The fun they seem to be having, watch them in the dugout, watch the way they play. They're fun. There's no panic. Like you saw yesterday, they fall behind. They don't panic. They just, you know, oh, okay, on to the next inning. I think they're in a good spot. Brock, by the way, when are you going to take me on one of those college football? I love college football. I mean, so I want to go on one of these trips.
Well, I have your number now. You have my number. You let me know where you want to go. And, you know, somehow maybe we'll, I mean, Benetti's going to be there. So I don't know. Be a little uncomfortable with Benetti there, but you know, we'll figure out. You let me know. You text me and you let me. Yep.
You don't come down to the SEC very often, though, so you know it just means more down here. So you don't understand that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Shot at Benetti to start. Shot at me to leave. I love it. You know what? I will take that. I appreciate it. And AJ, I hope we could do this again, man. That was great insight. As the hyphen said, man, Saturday was a blast. I love hearing just a catcher's perspective and on the pitching and on these swings and everything that you and Goldie brought. It was awesome. We'll do it again. I appreciate you, man. Thanks, AJ.
Thanks, guys. And by the way, now Ryan's on the do not fly list after the lies he told about me on the
air. Oh, so, that's true.
Now there's a lot of people.
Wow.
Yep, that's true, too.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff in there from AJ Pierzynski of Fox Sports, despite, you know, him and Brock getting a little too friendly. They do that, those Fox Sports guys. And I guess Benetti on the no fly list. We'll have to ask Brock about that. That he left Chicago, ruined AJ Pierzynski's idea of him. You know, Benetti and Brock worked together during the college football season, obviously, so all those guys are close. But yeah, in there, I think there are some really interesting things he mentioned about Logan Gilbert and about Cal Raleigh and what Raleigh has done. And this was Logan Gilbert after that incredible start over the weekend, talking about what Cal Raleigh has done for him, kind of knowing Logan Gilbert better than he knows himself.
I think he sees what's working quicker than I do sometimes, and how it relates to the guys we're facing, the team we're facing. He's known me in the minors. I had completely different stuff when I come back every year and tweak things, and he's a really quick learner for me and whatever, 13 other guys. It's a really hard job.
Yeah, I think that goes under the radar, right? It's very tough to kind of quantify how good of a defensive catcher someone is. And yes, there are a lot of metrics out there now. You can kind of dive through Baseball Savant. It's a great website to lose a couple hours in. And they quantify, outs above average and framing rates and all that stuff. But to really see how a catcher works with a pitcher, I don't think you can quantify that until you see and hear something like that. And, you know, when you see when Logan Gilbert's out there, how Cal Raleigh works with him, how he goes out and talks with him, how those two have become so familiar with each other. And what AJ said about Cal Raleigh developing as that kind of guy, I think he always had that in him. You know, we know that Cal Raleigh has always had that presence about him, but it was an interesting point there about, hey, you can't fully be the guy when you're not the veteran. Like when Tom Murphy was there, you can't be that guy. So Cal Raleigh perhaps taking another step in his development. And I don't want to say it directly correlates with his production at the plate, but he's already had almost a career year hitting from the right-handed side, home run-wise, already mm-hmm. four home runs hitting right-handed. Right, yeah, so I don't want to say those two correlate, but it goes into the overall picture of Cal Raleigh developing into more of a complete, fully formed person, and we're seeing kind of the leader that he can be out there. So, it's something I wouldn't have thought about, hey, you can't fully be yourself if you have another veteran catcher there, but it makes a lot of sense.
Totally. Did you hear the line from John Smoltz yesterday, who joined Ryan Rollinsmith and Brock, about how pitch framing and of that aspect of being a catcher is kind of overblown because you still have to have strike throwers in order to make that work? So it's a sense of, yes, Cal Raleigh is a really, really good defensive catcher. We know this. But he's made better by having pitchers who are strike throwers because it adds one other piece of trust that you probably don't get from a lineup that isn't known for throwing a lot of strikes. You get a couple more breaks maybe than others do.
Yeah, right. So again, on that too, yeah, going along with pitch framing, you're inherently stealing a call from an umpire. So it's based on your ability. It's based on fooling the umpire. But yeah, it boils down to, hey, it's ultimately a pitch that was a ball that you're turning into a strike, which is good every so often. But exactly. I think if you have a lot of good strike throws, that's a great point that you made, Justin, that helps a lot as well. And Cal Raleigh understanding the best pitch to kind of get out of these guys. Mm-hmm. They kept calling back to what he did against the White Sox last year when he had Luis Castillo throw like 47 fastballs in a row because that four-seamer was working so well. And he mixed in a couple of sinkers. But to have Castillo just go all fastballs in that situation, that's not something you would ever think to do. And so for Cal Raleigh to channel that and what he did with Bryce Miller, and Bryce Miller was perfect against the Braves for much of his outing because they went back to that fastball where inherently you think, okay, you can't just keep using a fastball up there. You need to diversify. You got to expand your pitch mix. But no, there's Raleigh understanding, hey, look, the Braves missed on this a couple of times. Let's go to it until they hit it. They weren't hitting it. So to have the confidence to call that, and we saw that directly result in wins for Miller and Castillo in that Braves series. I think Logan Gilbert in his 8 innings against the Astros. I mean, that's how good they have been defensively and why this pitching staff has been solid and why they've been historic and why it's the only thing you can kind of hang your hat on right now if you're the Mariners, because the offense has not been there.
The way we all know this, the third time through the lineup is where things start to get a little gnarly, right? The pitchers get a little bit of fatigue. The hitters have seen kind of everything that you've thrown at them the first two times through, and that's usually where you get yourself in trouble. And that's also up to a guy like Cal, who can really help dictate that third time through what he's seen from behind the plate and what they may be timing up and how he can, you know, change things that the pitcher may not want to change. So that's that where we heard at spring training where Cal and Logan got back and forth on shaking each other off or whatever, trusting in somebody. You can't build that without a lot of rapport and a lot of trust with each other. So he's invaluable at this point, and I cannot imagine what I loved Murphy. I loved his leadership. You heard about all that from spring training and the guys that he was a veteran dude that worked hard. But Cal is just a different beast, and I love him. He's my favorite.
Also because he has a great nickname, and he's lived up to it.
Obviously.
Well, I mean, Justin's still hoping to be roommates with him at some point.
Yeah, he's going
to
be my
roommate. There was some chatter about that. I don't know.
Yeah, oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I've missed all this.
Oh, yeah.
So what's happening there?
Going on? Yeah, well, I don't know.
Down in Arizona or here?
No, it happened here. It happened.
You want to be roommates with him here?
Obviously.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Logan moved out.
Because he got married.
He saw an opportunity. Because you guys bonded over Montana.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking. Yep. Well, I think it would work.
I think he's also probably looking for some roommates down in Arizona because he bought a place down in Arizona and now he's probably alone if he's used to roommates. So there you go. You can live with Raleigh down at spring training. Yeah. I'm sure he would be fine with that idea.
And we've just all wondered where Betsy would fall in all of this, but we haven't gotten a clear.
Well, Betsy's not real, so that's not a problem, right? So there we go.
She wants what's best for me.
You know, one thing that AJ did mention, Mitch Garver, he thinks he'll be the one to break out. I think, yeah, you have to pin your hopes on that and say, out of all these guys, you need that middle of the order consistency because once again, you've brought in these offseason acquisitions and once again, they've been slow to kind of get going. So Garver, as that middle of the order power bat, you need him going somewhere, you know, hitting four or fifth or somewhere in that middle of the order. You have Polanco pretty well slotted into the third spot. You're not going to mess with Julio at the top of the order, but you got to have Mitch Garver providing that pop. And we saw that one brief instance where he did. When he had the walk-off against the Braves, and we drove in a run yesterday, he had the sack fly, but you got to have that consistency out of Mitch Garver. So, hey, A.J. Pierzynski thinks he will break out. We'll go with a guy who has played many years in the league and is a professional analyst doing this, but right now, that is a guy that you look at and say, okay, this can't be another offseason where a highly valued acquisition, a guy that you thought would be the everyday DH, and he has pretty much because, you know, you'll give Mitch Haniger his off days and sometimes he will be a DH. But for all intents and purposes, Mitch Garver is the DH. And if you're going to have him in there every single day, he's got to be producing more. And I thought and I really hope because he's a good guy, too. They're all good guys. This is what makes it so tough. They're all very nice, likable guys. So when he had that walk off, it was that feeling of relief. We all talked about that. The bat flip that was more of the finally, not even the excitement, yeah, but just the weight getting off his shoulders. And it hasn't led to the consistency that we hope. But that's kind of the theme. We can get into it with Brock as well, that you're just not finding any consistency on offense, whether that's Julio, that's Haniger, that's Mitch Garver. So right now, the offense is just missing a lot to help sustain this pitching staff. So good stuff there from AJ Pierzynski. Brock will join me next. We'll talk about the loss and then get into plenty of Seahawks stuff as well. Corey Provis, the voice of the Twins, will join us at 7:30. Brady Henderson at 8:30. This is the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.